The First Coast heads back to the beach. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at this weekend's reopening of the beaches in Duval and St. John's counties. Did you go? What do you think about the beaches opening back up to the public in this pandemic? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we've got some financial advice and support for stressed-out seniors in this time of true volatility. But first this hour, the latest on the spread of COVID in Florida. Statewide, the Florida Department of Health reports 26,314 coronavirus cases, 774 deaths. In our area, there are now 1,408 cases and 34 deaths. Clay County also saw a notable increase from Sunday's report. They jumped from 227 to 247 cases over the weekend with two more deaths Sunday. And another big development to share, Governor Ron DeSantis says Florida schools will remain closed for the remainder of the school year. This pandemic has dragged on for over a month now, and people are getting restless. We certainly saw evidence of that because over the weekend, beaches in Duval and St. John's counties partially reopened to the public. Many of you probably saw the images and video of people flooding the beach. They were so excited to get out there. Now, there are some restrictions. You can only access the beach for activities like surfing, biking, or walking only during certain hours. And you can't gather in large groups. Now, this decision was controversial. The beaches opened up as the state saw its largest single-day increase in new COVID cases. And the decision got mixed reviews both locally and nationally, with lots of negative media attention focused on Jacksonville. Was that fair? And how do you think the reopening of the beaches went over the weekend? Well, Atlantic Beach Mayor Ellen Glasser is on the line with some insights for us this morning. Mayor Glasser, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you on the show. And as we speak with Atlantic Beach Mayor Ellen Glasser, give us a call and let us know, did you go to the beach this weekend? What do you think about the beaches reopening? Good idea or bad idea, given that we have not yet seen the peak of COVID in Florida? It's 549-2937 to join us. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we're already getting a spirited discussion about this on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Well, Mayor Glasser, how was everything in your neck of the woods, Atlantic Beach, this weekend out on the beaches?
Well, I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk about this because I have been on the ground in Atlantic Beach. We did have a lot of people the first day that we opened. It was mostly local folks that had been frustrated and pent up for the last month. I mean, it had been 4 weeks since we closed, but I think most people were practicing social distancing. There was a little more standing than I would have preferred. But we saw lower numbers as the weekend went on. So we're watching this really closely. You know, each city has its own epidemic curve. And listening to the lead up for the story, I'm going to say that, you know, we have had some different trends here in our zip code at the beaches. So, you know, it's not always what you see on social media or what the national news media puts out there. So I've been looking very closely at what's been going on at our beach.
Yes. Now, certainly Jacksonville came in for a torrent of national media bashing with this decision, a lot of criticism about this decision. The mayor of Jacksonville, Lenny Curry, was called irresponsible for doing this. There were lots of photos shared of people crowding, particularly Jack's Beach. And so you're the mayor of Atlantic Beach, which didn't seem to have as big of crowds. But what do you think of the criticism the city has come in for?
Well, I want to say that you know, the beaches are just kind of a lightning rod in terms of what happens in Florida. You know, my message to people is I don't want you to go to the beach. I mean, we are under a stay-at-home order. I mean, we want people to be at home as much as possible, especially the people that are over 65 and vulnerable. But it's very obvious to me that people's mental health depends on being able to get out and exercise. because the beaches were closed, we had congestion in the interior portions of Atlantic Beach. And this is all about a balance. And so there's no perfect solution. Reports change every day. But, you know, my message is don't go to the beach. But if you need to exercise, go. And that's why we started with restrictions of hours and activities. That's been done in other, actually, hotter spots than Jacksonville. Because, you know, people need to get outside. So we're watching it very closely, as I said. But I want to say that the decision as far as the new restrictions, you know, did come from Mayor Curry, but he did do so with consultation from the three beach mayors.
And you all agreed that it was time to open. Were you all on the same page about that, to open up?
Well, I mean, we have been looking at this for a couple of weeks as we've been sort of tracking the curve, if you will, in Jacksonville. We are not South Florida. I think it's fair to say that we all expected the number of positive cases to go up as testing goes up. But I'm looking at hospitalizations and deaths, and I'm also looking at what's happening in my zip code. And our numbers have remained very flat for the last 12 days. So, again, this could change tomorrow. But here's the thing, is that I think it was unrealistic to think that we would keep the beaches closed forever. They've been closed for 4 weeks, and we're not making anybody go. We're encouraging social distancing. We've put our precious resources out there to try to help people do the right thing. And I think most people are trying. It's not perfect, but we can't keep them closed forever. I mean, this has been a very difficult decision for all of us. Trust me, it's not easy.
Sure. We'll go to your calls in a moment for Atlantic Beach Mayor Ellen Glasser. Let us know how you feel about the reopening of the Duval and St. Johns County beaches over the weekend. It's 549-2937. And as you said, Mayor Glasser, Mayor Curry in Jacksonville cited the number of hospitalizations and deaths as part of his reasoning behind this, saying that hospitals aren't being overwhelmed in our area, that he feels that we might have hit the peak locally. Certainly outside our building here at WJCT Studios, we see far less people coming to TIAA Bankfield to get the COVID test than we saw last week. We're seeing a drop off there. That said, though, Florida cases aren't expected to peak until early May. And thus the criticism we've seen of Jacksonville. If we see a spike, would it, in hindsight, be seen as maybe a mistake to open up the beaches before the end of the month, since we aren't expected to see a peak in cases until the first days of May?
Well, let me just respond by saying that a report that I've looked at from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, which is a highly regarded predictive model for this, says that Florida has passed the peak in terms of deaths per day and hospital resource use. So, and there was another well-regarded local physician that talked about that as well. So you do get conflicting information. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but I am listening to the experts. So we look at where is the risk for contracting COVID-19. I mean, we look at the vulnerable populations, and again, I'm looking locally at our trends here in our zip code. Sure, if we realize that we need to impose greater restrictions, we're going to do that. But again, we get to a point where people are really hurting out there, and I just don't think it was realistic to think that we could wait for weeks or months before we did something. And again, these are restrictions. It's not an opening of the beaches. It's for exercise. So we're going to do our best to enforce that.
Let's go to some calls now for Atlantic Beach Mayor Ellen Glasser. The beaches opened up Friday. Did you go to the beach? Do you support the decision? Are you worried about the decision? Let us know your thoughts. It's 549-2937. Judy has been holding in East Arlington. Hey, Judy, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I respect Mayor Curry, and I applaud him for the previous work that he's done since this pandemic. I mean, he was really aggressive in closing everything down in the beginning, but why would he do this? Why would he open up the beach? I think it was not a good decision. I understand that he was in collaboration with other mayors, but I just feel that it was a premature decision. I don't think that the beaches should have been open. I mean, with those pictures and we were on CNN and or CNN did an article about us, and, you know, which is good, is letting everyone know that, you know, this should not have happened. It just did not look good for our city, and I definitely do not agree with the mayor. He should rethink that. I mean, everyone has to, you know, sometimes you do make mistakes, but he can come right back and just say he was premature in doing this or however he wants to say it, and he just needs to close the beaches, and that's just my opinion.
All right, Judy, thanks. Mayor Glasser, you know, Mayor Curry did get widespread praise for his handling of the pandemic from the start. People who didn't like this move on his part thinks that, you know, they're saying things like, well, he threw away his parachute a few hundred feet before we hit the ground. But it doesn't sound like you necessarily agree with that, Mayor.
Well, I will say that a lot of the social media posts and some of the national media stories, they use pictures from other places. There's definitely an issue with depth perception when you are actually on the beach and you see people out there and look to see if they're properly spaced. I mean, I've been out there and I've had to ask kids to pick up their towels and move along. And, you know, there's an education process that accompanies this. But again, this is not a sort of a mandatory thing where you are required to go to the beach. I mean, we expect people to try to follow all the guidelines in terms of social distancing and even masks if you can't accomplish that. But nobody has to go to the beach. This is not something we're forcing anyone to do. I was surprised over the weekend to get emails from people that first went to the beach. They actually made a decision to go out there, and then they complained that they thought it was too crowded. But, you know, they were also going. So there's an education process. There were a lot of people, but there actually was a large degree of social distancing going on. So I totally respect the caller's opinion on that. It's a matter of when to do it. But again, I don't think we could have kept them closed forever, and it has been 4 weeks. That's never happened before. I'll say that St. John's County has
never in the city's history have the beaches been closed that long. Is that right?
Not to my knowledge, but I will say St. John's County followed suit by imposing restrictions. Georgia's beaches have been opened, you know, Brevard counties are open. So I think that it got a lot of news play just because we are one of the biggest cities and we have such a large a population in the greater Jacksonville area.
Yeah. Now, Nassau County, they have stood firm against reopening. We do need to note they still have closed beaches for now anyway. Let's go to Dana in Arlington. Hi, Dana. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I when they closed the beaches and decided they might reopen them, I thought it was a selfish idea. I thought it was dangerous and it shouldn't be done. However, I kind of changed my mind and kind of went on the flip side with it, only because I'm a citizen. I think the moral uplift would be great. Obviously, it's a choice whether you go to the beaches or not. But literally, I'm seeing going into places like Walmart, they're crammed in like, it just seems like it's a small mitigating factor as far as exposure. You go into a Walmart and it's, you know, a whole lot worse. So that's my comment, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Dana. We've heard that a lot from supporters of this move, Mayor Glasser. They say, hey, you know, there are more crowds at Publix or grocery stores than at the beach. The other side of that is going to get food isn't obviously essential for everyone. Critics of the move say going to the beach isn't essential, that, you know, you don't have to go to the beach to live. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, I'm gonna take an easy out here and say that I didn't determine what the essential activities were in the state, right? Those were listed by the governor. And I agree with the caller about going to indoor locations where there's a density of people for a prolonged time. I don't recommend you go there either, and definitely wear a mask if you go. Again, that is definitely essential to get your groceries and your prescriptions. But again, to go to the beach is not mandatory. You don't have to go. I don't encourage you to go, but you're certainly not in a tightly dense area for a prolonged time at the beach. And I am concerned about people's mental health. I mean, I can't tell you how much email I have gotten on this. Seeing children with their parents out there, they put their bathing suits on at 8 o'clock in the morning, the day that the beach was going to open at 5. They needed to have an outlet. We've seen a little bit of an uptick on domestic violence calls. I mean, I'm reading about the impact of the economic crash on people's well-being. We got to do something. I know this may not seem perfect. We don't want to put people at risk, but this is a choice. And exercise is essential. So I appreciate the concern, though.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Susan in Mandarin. Hi, Susan.
Why the mayor of Atlantic Beach didn't require wearing masks and keeping 6 feet apart. There was a judge in Kansas that said that churches can't be exempt from these rules, and you have to let people go to church, but they can be required to follow the same rules as everyone else. And as people are mentioning, people are going to Walmart and being crowded. So as we transition into back to normal life, could the transition be wearing masks and keeping 6 feet apart? And the beach could have been a good experiment for that. So why was that not included in
okay.
the order?
Yes, yeah, Susan. Mayor, what about that? Mandating people wear masks when they go to the beach?
Well, that's a great question. But I also want to say that your caller used the word transition. We've been learning as we go. None of us have ever been through this before, and we are transitioning in government as well. Every day we realize there are new issues that we need to address, and unfortunately, we can't do everything overnight. We just don't have the resources. So last weekend, we did start an education campaign in Atlantic Beach to put signs up at our beach access points where it's very difficult to socially distance. So if you're heading out and somebody's coming back in, it's really hard to keep the 6 foot distance. So we're starting with that. We want to make it as easy as we can for people that maybe don't have masks. You could put like a cloth over your face or put your shirt up or just do something to protect the other people that are around you. But I'm looking at that option, ma'am, and I think it's an excellent question. But we are in transition right now. And that would actually be probably a measure that we would implement. Like if the crowds were, if people weren't socially distancing, if they don't get into an exercise routine and we had to shut the beaches back down, having a requirement to wear masks might be a stopgap to that. So this is just, I'm just giving you an indication of my thinking process and trying to be logical about this.
Good question. Sure. Lots of feedback coming in on social media. Terry tweets the show, the beach is open too early. The peak is not here because not enough people have been tested. If there is a surge, our healthcare workers will suffer and so will the economy. Let's figure out how to work with the situation instead of creating more uncertainty, she says. There's a lively discussion about this on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Says Water writes, I went for a walk with my son in Atlantic Beach. It's nice to see everyone respecting the social distancing guidelines. And it was nice to have space for people to spread out rather than congesting First Street. Limiting hours also helped. You know, we have heard about that, Mayor, that before the beach is open, First Street had gotten very congested. I heard some people were even calling it COVID Alley, that it wasn't really safe to go out there. Now, we're also getting some feedback on Facebook and Twitter from people who are concerned that some of the photos national media outlets shared of the reopening of the Jack's beaches included old photos of crowded beaches rather than current ones. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I'll check into that. But there's certainly some frustration among the local population about the way this community has been portrayed and the decision that was made here locally. And so we are hearing a bit of that too, Mayor Glasser.
Well, and a lot of that really comes from outside of our area. I mean, I think people love to make Florida the punchline for bad press. So I do know some of the photos I've seen were not from this past weekend. But I also will say I do not think Friday should be the day that we open. I don't think that should be used as a benchmark for whether this is a good idea or not, because, you know, people wanted to get out of their houses. I mean, it's difficult when you pass your neighbor and you haven't talked to them for a while to not stop and say something. And they did it at 6 feet, but it was a very, very unusual day. So
Steve is in San Marcos.
I'm glad you mentioned the healthcare workers. I'm just going to say, I know this isn't a conversation about healthcare workers, but none of our actions, we don't want any of that to take away from the nature of this crisis. It's very personal to me. I mean, I have family members that are in healthcare in New York, but, you know.
And have they talked to you about the opening of the Jack's Beaches? Are they upset about it?
Well, I mean, I have to say again, every city has its own epidemic curve. We are not South Florida. That's not to say that maybe it couldn't get worse, but I'm listening to what experts are saying about our peak in Duval County. And I will say New York is different. I mean, you cannot get away from this crisis in New York. But this is very personal to me, but opening the beach and the plight of our healthcare workers and first responders are different conversations. They just are.
But to be clear, you believe, and so do the other local officials, that we may well be past the local peak of cases. Is that accurate to say?
Well, the purpose behind most of the restrictions that started about a month ago was to flatten the curve. I mean, you heard people talking about, yes, we're going to have a rise in cases. People are going to get sick, but this was about hospital capacity and the number of beds. We are well under capacity in Duval County. I'm looking at the hospitalization and death rate in comparison to the rise in the number of positive cases. And I've looked at several reports that suggest that we have reached our peak. Now, again, I'm not an expert, and we're going to reevaluate this every day, but there's a lot of information out there. People just can't just pick up on one news story and think they know the whole picture. It's changing every day.
Jane sent us this message on our Facebook page. I was at Michler's Landing Sunday. It was mobbed. I was the only person there with a mask. People need to move, not just stand around. Kids were in the water, parents with towels and bags sitting on the beach. It was a disaster waiting to happen. Watch for an uptick, she says, in COVID-19 cases over the next 5 to 10 days. I am not returning. So if we do see an uptick, Mayor Glasser, would the beaches close again?
Well, I think it's going to depend on sort of the information. You know, what is the cause of the uptake? So there's a lot of focus now on nursing homes. So if we thought that the source of the uptick was something that had nothing to do with the beach, I mean, that would be something we would take into consideration. We look at the vulnerable population. I mean, if it's people that have underlying conditions, I mean, they shouldn't be going to the beach. We can't sort of monitor what everybody does. I think it would just depend on the circumstances. I don't think we can blame the beach for everything. It's been very difficult. I appreciate people's concerns, but dealing with this crisis is much more than just the beach. And I'm just going to say, with Michler's Landing, that's in St. Johns County. I'm a small town mayor in Atlantic Beach, and I'm on the ground in my city. So I'm sure we'll be talking to the other area leaders about moving forward. So I'm certain that conversation will be happening this week.
We'll continue to follow it, and we want to thank you for sharing your thoughts about it. Always good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate it.
She's Ellen Glasser, mayor of Atlantic Beach, and we'll continue to follow this story. Much more still ahead, meanwhile. Up next.
I say to all of them, don't panic. Don't let your emotions interfere with logic, with rational decision-making.
Help and support for seniors who are isolated in this pandemic and worried about their finances, too. That's after this.
Northeast Florida has its fingerprints all over the history of popular music, and contemporary local artists are making music that's reverberating across the country. But I've found, even with apps putting millions of songs into our pockets, it's hard to discover local music.
Can I get y'all to just bob your heads?
I'm Void magazine editor Matt Shaw, and that's why I'm hosting the Voidcast, produced by WJCT. You'll hear from local artists and the people who lived local music history. WJCT.org/Voidcast. Before you leave.
Jungle Adventures in East Orange County lets visitors experience the wilds of old Florida. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll venture inside the jaws of Swampy the Alligator. We'll discuss Hopkins plat maps of Miami and remember the glass bank of Cocoa Beach. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, market volatility has millions of Americans worried about their nest eggs right now. One prominent local financial advisor is urging her clients not to panic. Here's Jeanette Bajalia, founder of A Woman's Worth. Jeanette, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be with you, Melissa.
You know, your clients and anyone who has money invested for their retirement is obviously very worried right now. And even if you don't have investments, you're just worried about whether you're going to keep your job. So you're saying we all need to keep our calm during this current market volatility. Easier said than done. But what's your advice that you're giving your clients right now?
Well, I have different areas of advice, and it depends on whether my clients are younger or whether they're, you know, more retired or pre-retirees. We have like three generations of clients we serve. And I say to all of them, a common trend, don't panic. Don't let your emotions interfere with logic, with rational decision making. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and if you can keep your head above water and if you can make sure you make the right financial choices, the right life choices, things will get better.
Sure. Now, people are in large numbers making rapid changes to their investments, or they're getting out of the market altogether. You've heard a lot. We've heard a lot about that. And you don't advise that, right?
I do not. I do not advise that. Both at Petros and at Woman's Worth, we're about in being invested for the long haul. Because if you have a financial plan that is focused on your life goals, and if that investment plan, typically most financial plans build in market uncertainty. They build in and they anticipate that the market's going to react this way. So you might have be more of in a panic mode if you have all your eggs in one basket. But if you have a plan that anticipates markets go up, markets come down, you want to make sure it's the plan you stay focused on, the goals that plan was built on, and then you move forward. I do not at all recommend you get out of the market and you sit on the sideline, because then you never know when to go back in. And you lose a lot of opportunity.
So what if you are, though, really close to retirement and you see your nest egg dropping in value? What about that group of people?
The group of people that are close to retirement, I highly recommend that you take a second opinion. Get a second opinion, because if you're close to retirement or you're retired and you have these worries, I would put my head on the chopping block and say you don't have a plan. You have a collection of investments. People worry about investments. They don't worry about a plan. So those that are close to retirement, get a second opinion. Find out why you're invested or why you're worrying. I know I got a call over the weekend to a woman I just started working with, Melissa, and she was 71 years old, and she was retired, and she had her money invested as though she was a 35-year-old. And that worried me, and it should worry her. It kept her awake at night. She was talking to me like, I have to go back to work. And I said, no, you just have to get the proper life stage investing strategy. And I think that's what I would say to the people who are nearing retirement or already retirement. Don't worry. Just take an assessment through a second opinion and make sure you have the appropriate life stage plan.
Now, this is all great advice, and people can learn more from you because you're getting ready to host a live webinar with Ed Slott. He is a big name in the finance world. What's going to be happening?
I am so excited about this this webinar. Ed Slott is considered by Wall Street Journal the nation's IRA expert, and he has been on every financial media channel. We are hosting him live on April 21st at 10 o'clock, and this is an educational outreach. I want to give something back to men and women, regardless of their age, because he's going to talk about all the changes that we have seen since the first of the year with regard to IRAs, 401ks, and he's going to be talking about some of the tax changes. He's going to be talking about the amazing opportunities that you have right before your very eyes to leverage how you manage your IRA assets. So we encourage everybody to tune in.
Okay, and this is coming up Tuesday the 21st at 10 a.m. They can go to your Facebook page. It's called Woman's Worth, or they can give you a call at 824-5656. He'll also be talking about the CARES Act, the legislation recently passed by Congress to help individuals and businesses. So this is a good opportunity, and I'd encourage people to check it out. Jeanette Bajalia, always good to get your financial insights. Thanks for keeping us calm amidst the storm. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa. You have a great day.
Well, while weeks of social distancing and isolation are stressing so many of us, it can be even more serious if you're a senior. Communities across the country are seeing spikes in domestic violence, and that often includes elder abuse. Many seniors are in facilities where they can't leave or receive visitors. And if you live independently, you're still isolated and lacking support if you're sheltering at home. Recent data from the Florida Department of Elder Affairs shows 21% of our area seniors aged 60 and older live alone. But there's help and support out there for seniors, and ElderSource CEO Linda Levin is on the line to share it right now. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning.
It's so good to have you on the show. You have so much that you're working on to help local seniors. Can you begin by telling us about your new helpline?
Sure. Well, the helpline has actually been around for a good number of years, but we are getting a lot more attention now as seniors are needing to connect to new resources. Our staff are specially trained to help older adults all year, as well as adults with disabilities and caregivers, connect to resources. But new resources are coming to light during this critical time.
Right. Now, and it's so exciting to see ElderSource has really stout partners with this helpline. Well, the other day, we got a quick little look at this from Dr. Sandra Graham, Executive Director of Behavioral Health at Memorial Hospital. She is partnering with you at ElderSource on the helpline. Let's listen to that quickly.
Given the evolution of the pandemic, our seniors, of course, have been asked to remain inside, and that doesn't change the fact that they still need some support. And so with this support line and this collaboration, we were able to meet their needs where they are right now, which is at home. So with this phone number that we've established, they're able to call in and ask us any questions that they may have, and then we're able to offer them the right redirection or education and make sure that they have what they need.
And that COVID-19 support line is 904-702-2552. It's up every weekday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And how are seniors accessing this?
To date, Melissa, we've had over 75 callers, which is phenomenal, in 1 week alone. So we are so excited to be able to offer this to the community. We're so grateful for Mayor Curry and our partnership with him and City of Jacksonville and ElderSource, because a lot of our seniors need us right now, and that's evident with a lot of the calls that we've been getting. A lot of requests for support on receiving food. They're afraid to go out to the grocery store, so we've talked about some of the delivery options. So just a lot of it is linkage and resources, making sure they know who to call if they're having trouble paying their bills or keeping their lights on. So a big part of what we do is just education and linkage, but also we have this phone line managed by mental health professionals, because what we're finding too is a lot of our seniors are dealing with anxiety and depression surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic.
So again, this COVID-19 support line, let me say the number again. It's 904-702-2552. It's active every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is in collaboration with Memorial Hospital Jacksonville, ElderSource, and the City of Jacksonville. If you're age 55 or older, this support line is for you to help you with stress, anxiety, any issues you're facing due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Doesn't cost a thing. Just call them up at 702-2552 and reach out for help. So thank you, Dr. Sondra Graham, Executive Director at Behavioral Health at Memorial Hospital. Thanks for this.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay, so that helpline is already getting dozens of calls, Linda Levin, which shows you how seniors are struggling out there. And at ElderSource, that's just one of the things that you are working on to support the senior population, right?
That's right. And that's just one of the resources that we're able to refer people to. We have other mental health resources as well, other providers who are also doing counseling because it's been identified as a growing need. We have telephone reassurance programs, both offered by our providers that we contract with, and also our own Caring Connections program, connecting seniors to other people to talk to on the phone, just as a friendly connection during the day. And we have now for caregivers, a virtual caregiver support group, so they could still participate in a support group virtually and get some help that they need.
And what kind of feedback are you getting from your senior clients out there? There are so many people that have been sheltering at home for weeks, haven't left their house once, and that can take its toll over time.
It does take a toll. It's a lonely place to be when you're home alone and isolated and can't connect. And they're not, you know, we're telling people not to go shopping, not to go out to stores, and so they're running low on resources at home. So we're able to connect people to food that they're calling for, supplies that they're calling for, relationships and connections that they're calling for, some emotional support, and even questions about their own Medicare. What's covered now? What's not covered now? What benefits are available to them? How do they get their prescriptions? And so our SHINE program, we're making referrals to as well.
Are you hearing from seniors who have contracted COVID and are dealing with the disease right now?
We haven't heard too much of that coming into our helpline. We're getting more calls about seniors who are trying to prevent getting COVID and are staying home and self-isolating, keeping the physical distance, but needing support and social connection.
Okay, and we're speaking with Linda Levin, CEO of ElderSource, about all of the resources they have out there for seniors. You can access this for free. Now, we heard about the senior helpline that is active and working through behavioral health experts at Memorial Hospital. You know, I think, honestly, Linda, more than anything right now, people just need to connect. They just need a friendly voice on the other end. I was in a Zoom group last night with a bunch of girlfriends, and after it was over, one of them texted me and said, I needed that so badly. I just needed that because this is so tough right now, and I feel so isolated, she said.
Yeah. The social connections are so important. Isolation is a very dangerous thing. You know, people become lonely, they can become depressed, it can affect their physical health, and those connections are so important. So when we talk about physical distance, we still need to make sure we're having social connection, whether it's by phone, by Zoom, which we're all becoming experts at these days, or, letters, anything that people can do. Children can make cards for seniors, volunteers can make calls to seniors and participate in these social activities, and assistance could be provided now through this technology. The mental health counseling, the telephone reassurance, the support group are all available to people, and they can find out how to connect to those through our helpline and our website.
Now, nonprofits, like all businesses, are worried about the economy right now. Tell us about your situation at ElderSource, because you are a vital resource in this area for seniors, and we need to make sure that you keep going strong through this crisis and beyond.
Yes, thank you. So we have been fortunate in terms of getting federal and state support for these programs and services for older adults and for our own operations. We've 100% of our staff are working remotely. Our staff are all working, including our helpline, Monday through Friday, and providing support. We also received funding from local partners, community partners, the First Coast Relief Fund, the Jim Moran Foundation, Florida Blue, Humana, others who have really stepped up to help us deliver these services and supports to seniors.
That's good to hear. And isn't it amazing how we've all discovered how easy it is to work remotely? It's not ideal for everyone and every job, but it's going to change the way we work, I think, permanently at some companies.
Yeah, well, we're definitely learning from this. You know, it's a scary time. It's a challenging time, but we are learning new ways to do things. Some efficiencies are being created, and we're able to help people in new ways we didn't really think of before necessarily.
Okay. And so with all of that said, can you once again let everyone know how they can contact both ElderSource and also the support lines that you have live right now for seniors?
Sure. So the one number people need to remember is 1-888-242-4464 or locally 904-391-6699. That's our helpline, and the staff there will connect them to the other resources and the other helplines that are out there for their help.
So it's 391-6699. If you're a senior, you can call the free ElderSource helpline. They've got specialists on the other end to help you with whatever you're dealing with, whether it's anxiety, depression, trouble maybe accessing food or other services. They've got free Medicare counseling. They've got a caregiver support group. There's free support out there for you. So take advantage of it. They are there waiting for your call. And I want to thank you so much. She's Linda Levin, the CEO of ElderSource. ElderSource.org is the website, right, Linda, to check that out as well.
Yep, that is correct. Thank you.
All right. Well, be safe and thank you for all you do. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Take care.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but up next, Culpepper will drop by with a look at this week's virtual NFL draft, which starts Thursday. The Jaguars look to be very, very busy this week. Cole has a look at that and some other sports news and notes in just a moment. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Cavendish Partners PA and Michael Cavendish, a law practice supporting Jacksonville's business community, downtown, by appointment, and on the web at cavpartners.com. Grassroots Natural Market, local and organic, family-owned and operated since 2006, featuring immune-supporting supplements for your family's health and all the groceries on your list. Open daily with curbside pickup. On Instagram at grassroots5pts.
Jungle Adventures in East Orange County lets visitors experience the wilds of old Florida. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll venture inside the jaws of Swampy the Alligator. We'll discuss Hopkins plat maps of Miami and remember the glass bank of Cocoa Beach. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Zoe Kazan. She's now starring in the HBO series The Plot Against America, based on the Philip Roth novel. Her other films include Ruby Sparks and The Big Sick. Zoe Kazan is the granddaughter of Aaliyah Kazan, who directed the films On the Waterfront and A Streetcar Named Desire, and who testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 50s. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Rural America is most likely to reopen first, but doctors serving these communities know that far from being immune, they may be uniquely vulnerable. How do those leading the fight on our rural front line tackle those who argue it can't happen here? I'm Sasha Ann Simons. That story, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, in a few moments, we'll speak to Cole Pepper about NFL draft week. The Jaguars figure to be very busy there. The draft begins Thursday with the first round, then rounds 2 and 3 on Friday and rounds 4 to 7 on Saturday. Cole says this year the draft will be much different. Of course, it's going to be conducted as a virtual exercise. Here's how it will work. You think of a wheel with the commissioner, Roger Goodell, in the middle. He'll be set up in his basement, literally in his basement in Bronxville, New York. Each of the 32 teams will be connected to the commissioner via a WebEx video conference. In this era of virtual connections, we're trying to establish our connection to Cole right now. Do we have Cole? Not yet. Okay. So let me go through this quickly. Each team for the virtual draft will have all of their personnel connected. The Jaguars are going to use Microsoft Teams for their own video conference. And then there will be the draft picks. Cole, are you there? Good morning. Okay. We still don't have Cole. But you know what? He did speak with the NFL's vice president of event strategy, Matt Shapiro, this week. And what Shapiro said is that 58 top prospects are being sent a kit. It includes a camera phone, lights, and the hats of all 32 teams so that they can actually have their big draft moment. This is kind of cool. The entire event and broadcast will be set up with the commissioner in his basement in New York as the hub of the wheel, with the 32 teams and 58 prospects all connecting in. That's a lot of video conferences and a huge IT logistics challenge, but the NFL says they are confident they can pull it off. Here's the NFL's Matt Shapiro.
It's new for everyone. It's different for everyone. I think all the clubs thus far have been understanding and patient and flexible. And certainly I understand that. It pushes people a little bit outside of their comfort zone, like all of us. Certainly, I'm sure you're not used to doing interviews this way. And the clubs are the same. But I'm confident in all those redundancies and all those technologies. And, you know, on the night of, we'll be ready for it and people will be flexible.
This is as close as sports fans will have had, you know, in a while, I think, to watch something like this. So is your expectation that the engagement's going to be kind of off the charts there?
We hope so. I mean, again, hopefully we're able to provide that distraction for people while being sensitive to everything that's going on. But we know that fans are hungry for sports content, and we're excited that the NFL can be there to provide that over 3 days.
So there you go. Now, Cole also asked the Jaguars brass about what happens if something goes wrong. Jaguars GM Dave Caldwell said, well, we'll just call it in, keep it simple. The Jaguars have 12 picks in the draft, including 2 in the first round, numbers 9 and 20. And Cole says there's a number of ways they could go with this. They have some needs, defensive tackle, cornerback, offensive line. They could use some help at wide receiver, tight end. And if they trade guys like, say, Leonard Fournette, defensive end, running back. So who are they going to take? Well, let's see how the first 8 picks play out. We do have Cole connected now. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, I think this draft promises to be one that could have a lot of directions it could go. And one of the things that has been cited for potential chaos has been the fact that the coronavirus has kept things separated and people have been not necessarily together at events, scouting events and pro days and that sort of thing. So less groupthink will happen among the separate NFL teams. And now to see what the Jaguars will have, if things go to chalk, if they kind of go as expected, I think the Jaguars are probably going to take an offensive tackle early on, either Andrew Thomas from Georgia, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, or Mekhi Becton from Louisville. But if there are some unforeseen selections, which I think we could have, things could get interesting. So in short, chaos is good for the Jaguars. Dave Caldwell says there are four players who are head and shoulders above the rest, and one of those guys falls to the Jags. They feel very good about those first selections. Those players, by the way, I think are Joe Burrow, the quarterback from LSU, the Ohio State duo of Chase Young and Jeff Okuda, and Clemson linebacker Isaiah Simmons. I think it's more likely the Jaguars wind up with an offensive lineman, and I think the second most likely pick is a wide receiver. However, also don't leave out of the conversation Florida cornerback C.J. Henderson, who might be the guy the Jaguars want to pick up with that ninth pick.
Now, getting back to the virtual draft, it's not a tragedy that some of these players are being denied their little moment of glory, but it's like a kid's not getting to walk in cap and gown at graduation or go to their prom. All the little rituals of life are having to be done remotely right now. So it will be interesting to see how the virtual draft plays out.
Yeah, and I asked Matt Girl of the NFL, hey, you're sending him 32 hats, so they'll be able to put the one hat that the team that drafts them on. What happens to the other 31 hats? He said, you know, to be honest, I'm not really sure. I don't know. Nobody else is handling that. You're exactly right. There are so many things that have become traditions and something that everybody kind of looks forward to doing through these things, whether it's a prom or graduation or what have you. Being able to walk them backstage and bring commissioners, one of those things. I would say the flip side of it is there are more draft prospects being involved, 58 this year. Usually you're talking about somewhere between 25 and 35 who are invited to the draft itself and have that moment to walk out on stage, guys expected to be first-round pick. Now you have almost twice that. So I think there's a real positive that you have more people involved. And that may be a lingering and lasting impact of this coronavirus impact you're drafting.
Yeah. Well, always good to get you on the line. Stay safe, and thanks for calling in. Still lots of sports news to talk about. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. I know it's been tough out there, but keep sending us your feedback about how you're doing at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.